Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. Nice to see you all. Today you might see there's several people with me here. There's Dan and Rich, plus there's the whole Sangha in the background. We just finished the training period with a Jukai ceremony. So I don't know how much I can talk after all of this, but today I wanted to talk on a koan that I do, you know, fairly regularly, probably every 6 months to a year. And this case is case 54 of the Book of Equanimity, Ongan's Great Compassionate One. Many of you have heard it before, but the points that are come out of this are excellent in terms of compassion in daily life. So the preface to the assembly, the eight compass points bright and clear, the 10 directions unobstructed, everywhere bright light shakes the earth. All the time there is marvelous functioning in the supernatural. Tell me, how can this occur? The main case. Attention. Ongan asks Dogo, what does the great compassionate bodhisattva do when she uses her manifold hands and eyes? Dogo said, it's like a person who reaches behind him at night in search of her pillow. Ongan said, I understand. Dogo said, what do you understand? Ongan said, all over the body are hands and eyes. Dogo said, you've really said it. You got 80% of it. Ongan asked, elder brother, how about you? Dogo replied, throughout the body are hands and eyes. The appreciatory verse. One hole penetrates space. Eight directions are clear and bright. Without forms, without self. Spring follows the rules. Unstopped, unhindered, the moon traverses the sky. Clear, pure, jeweled eyes and virtuous arms. Where is the approval in throughout the body instead of all over the body? Hands and eyes before you manifest complete functioning. The great function is everywhere. How could there be any hindrance? So in many ways, he's complicating something. I mean, compassion, it seems fairly straightforward to us. It can be anything from a label to people to something that we do naturally and unconsciously on a momentary basis. And this is something that both Ongan and Dogo are examining and seeing. You know, seeing if the other person's understanding or functioning of compassion is not in accord with Buddhism, but how naturally that has been absorbed into our world view, our world action that we do on a momentary basis. Many people are very interested in this aspect of compassion in terms of how centers function. It obviously is a very important part of practice is the development of compassion. The Zen school sometimes is criticized for its lack of practices based around compassion. And yet, from what I've noticed, there's no lack of it. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, sometimes, but that's life. Some Buddhist groups do external practices around compassion, such as the metta practices in the Theravadan school. So sending loving compassion to people and things, you know, etc. So in the Zen school, it comes from the inside out, and in many of the other schools, it comes from the outside in. It doesn't really matter what you practice. The important thing is that those things are practiced. Now, this is a very important thing. There is why. Why is it important? You know, nowadays we hear, you know, through political means that compassion is weakness. I hear this that's coming across. No, it's not really weakness. It's a strength. You know, how is that? Feeling for people around you is a real strength. Can you imagine this world without compassion? It'd be a pretty bleak place, you know. If it's taken to these extremes of the law of the jungle, my own survival, etc. Most of my heroes in history are those that put the people first before themselves. This is something that is put forward over and over through history. You know, it's not necessarily the very vicious and austere people that are remembered. They're remembered maybe in very negative and distant ways as warnings for us as human beings. You know, everything. I mean, we've just done session, and I remember coming out of session with my Izumi Roshi, and there were some kids watching Mr. Rogers, and Mr. Rogers was saying how much he loved everybody, and I just burst into tears. You know, I mean, just that love and the caring for one another. You know, it really touches us human beings. But then there's, you know, there's different kinds of compassion. So we now look at how, you know, like Avalokiteshvara, Kanon Bodhisattva, Kanzeon, these are just names for the same person. Even Kuan Yin, the Chinese goddess, etc., all are embodiments of this Avalokiteshvara. The Indian statues quite often have many, many heads. So there's maybe a stack of heads going up like this. And I think in the tradition, apparently Avalokiteshvara, witnessing the sorrows of the world, the suffering of the world, exploded basically because of all the suffering, could not hold it. So I forget who it was now, maybe one of Indra or one of the gods gave him, doesn't really matter, it's an asexual divinity or archetype, gave him 9 heads so that it can handle it. You know, take it or leave it, you know. But there is that, I mean, for many of us who witness the joys and the sorrows of the world, which is the experience of enlightenment, it's not just in one direction, develop that capacity through time. Now, if you look at these statues, so I'll describe the statue first. So say it's got 9 heads, and then each head has a face on 4 sides. And then there are multitude hands or arms, and these arms radiate in almost like a halo around the back until they come round the top. Now, to complicate matters, then they have an eye on every hand. You know, so this is a freak. No, really. But what is this? You know, we say it, like in the cone, it says has many hands and eyes. Why does it have many hands and eyes? For one, is that Avalokiteshvara or Kanon is meant to be the embodiment of of compassion. And that compassion is everywhere in all activities. But can we really see that? That's what this koan is about. Can we really see it in the activities that occur to us as human beings? Now, with the faces of Canon, Avalokiteshvara, some of the faces of Avalokiteshvara are not nice. You know, some of them have grimaces, protective faces. Others have very friendly and open faces. Some are laughing. Some are aggressive. All of these faces are there. Now, so what is that? What is compassion in that way? You know, for myself, is the easiest form of compassion is the form of getting a hug, and friendship, sharing banter. We see those things. But there's also the faces of compassion of the drill sergeant. You know, I had a friend of mine who was in the Danish army in Afghanistan, and he said he was in I think military intelligence. You know, I won't say anything about that, but he said he hated his sergeant. He just hated him because he just kept going, "No, don't do that. Do it this way," over and over. Get your time down. Refine it. Do it. And then he was in his first firefight, and his sergeant saved his life through training him in that way and not letting any of those sort of shortcuts get in the way. Apparently he just dived down and acted on instinct, or else he would have been dead in his first firefight. And he survived, you know, through that. So you've got these faces of compassion. You know, sometimes it's known as masculine compassion and feminine compassion. Well, that's too simplistic. You know, my mother was far tougher than my dad. You know, and it varies from person to person. You can arbitrarily put these things forward, but some of the best teachings came from when I was corrected from ways that I was operating in life. You know, Maizumi Roshi was really good at that. But at the same time, you know, I remember I was with him as his attendant, and he had this lady from Mexico City, and her daughter was having her legs broken, and then having almost like a rack put around her legs, so her legs would grow longer. And the mother was in tears about this because she had dwarfism. And so, you know, she was trying to get beyond a certain height so she would no longer be regarded in that way. And the same with her arms. And the mother was just in tears over all of this. And then Maizumi Roshi, you know, he just cried and just handed, there's nothing he could do. He just handed her a handkerchief. You know, you see this compassion, and then we value compassion. Well, he's compassionate. There's not compassion. Look at the motivation behind. Sometimes the greatest compassion is to leave somebody alone and let them go through that themselves. But then, you know, and this is what the eyes are for in terms of compassion. So I remember, I think it was in the 70s, the American government gave one of the nations in sub-Sahara Africa a whole bunch of tractors to help them boost their agriculture. And I thought this was a great idea. Of course, they didn't go there and see what was needed. And so they got all of these tractors, and then they ran out of gas. And so there's no gas. So what do you do? No mechanics. So, you know, compassion, this is the seeing things, is seeing to a situation. So you've got time, place, person, amount, whenever you deal with somebody. You know, it's not just compassion to do everything for them. It's just like, you know, if a person has the capacity, let them move into that capacity, let them fill that capacity. You know, and here, between these two monks, they're cognizant of this stuff. These are like Dharma brothers. They've known each other. Be like Pierre and Tim, you know, just having some chat between each other and just seeing where they stand. And you know, it's as simple as that. These are people who work and they sit just like many of us. And they're just seeing how each other work. It's like me and David Reedmar Tokyu, who's here. We came over from England at the same time, and you know, we have banter along those lines, you know, because it's fun. I like to know where he's coming from, and sometimes he'll say something that blows my mind. You know, I'm just not expecting it. You know, so there's those connections that you see in Sangha that are there. So this I, we see, and hopefully we see, we look at the situation. Should I enter into this or should I not? The center is full of that kind of thing. Is, you know, don't do certain works because then they can be done by somebody who can then contribute, feel that they've made a contribution. If you actually take that work, you're robbing them of an opportunity. You know, there's all of these things. So there's that. Then obviously compassion needs the overt act of helping somebody. You know, and this happens across the board. I remember when I felt my practice had changed was there was a guy on PCP down one of the streets in Los Angeles, and he was really acting weird. He was like climbing, he was flagging cars down and trying to climb inside them. You know, cut a long story short. But something inside me wouldn't let this go. I couldn't just go with my friends off to the restaurant. I had to do something about it. And, you know, eventually he got to the point where he was like walking into the sides of vehicles and bouncing back. And then I was like, I was getting closer and closer to doing something about it, but I didn't know what to do. I really didn't know what to do because they're very powerful when they're on PCP. And I'd seen this happening, and then eventually he stuck a broken bottle into his neck, and then obviously, I mean, it may seem a bit late to you by that point, you know. But then we could actually help him. So me and this other guy, we started to work on him. I just managed to stop this other guy from giving him a tourniquet on his neck. putting pressure points on there. But is that thing, and I'm not saying my actions were great by any means, but I had to do something. I couldn't let the opportunity go by. And it's not because I was being compassionate. There's that sense of, this is my life. Something needs to be done here. This is a human being like myself. There's a connection. That's the aspect of compassion. It's not that objective thing. It's that I am going to help you. It doesn't have those two sides. It's something needs to be taken care of and done. Just like in a family, you know, is that, you know, say you've been compassionate if you look after your kids. Or maybe you do. I don't know. You do it. You just do it. It's natural in that respect. So then, you know, you've got these two guys just talking, you know. So how does Avalokiteshvara use her many or manifold hands and eyes? And, you know, like anybody that's in practice together, you know, and there's a horizontal relationship there, you're going to say something. It doesn't really matter, you know, if you're the person's got better insight or whatever. You just go, yeah, he says, it's like a person reaching for a pillow in the middle of the night. I think it's one of the nicest, you know, expressions of compassion, you know, because for one, you're doing it for yourself, you know. You're not doing it for your partner, you know. It's just like, yeah, they heads down there, you know, stick a pillow under it. No, it's just doing it. It's just naturally, you know, and do you really know it? Do you really know it? So we do those things naturally. And those are some of the most wonderful acts of compassion I've ever seen, when somebody's unaware of it and they're just doing it, you know. I remember I was in Mendoza in Argentina. I just crossed over the border there and went down to Mendoza, and I was giving a talk at the University of Mendoza. And this guy who had been helping passing around the microphone to the people in the audience, he said, what is the essence of Zen? And I said, well, you're doing a really good job. You're passing around the microphone, and you know, and his perfect example is that people do these things naturally, simply because they feel that connection. They know the flow of living, etc. It's a natural expression in that way. And then, you know, obviously here so now Pierre responds to Tim and says, well, how can that be understood? You know, how can you understand it? It's not really a matter of understanding. You know, well, the Buddha said that you should be compassionate. No, it's not a matter of understanding it. It's feeling it. And that's where the training comes from. So, for instance, when I'm learning to count to 10, in breathing, and I realize how difficult it is, and then I talk with other people and I see that they're going through the same difficulty, that I feel compassion towards them, not through the method of counting from 1 to 10. That's a byproduct, but the compassion comes through. And then you sit with people for a long period of time, we all go through the same thing, that connection is really developed there. Is it understood? No, it's ridiculous. You know, practice is ridiculous. You know, you sit still and all of these things come in, and how would people believe that? But it's true. You start to feel for the people around you. Why? Because one of the main things that occurs through practice is that the ideas and beliefs around practice begin to drop off, and you can feel and experience the people around you. Not only the people, but your environment. You know, which is an amazing thing. I remember Akiba Roshi, who's now the Japanese bishop of North America. He would say, at the end of session, people look more beautiful. Take it or leave it. But it's true, you know, in many ways, because you don't have a lot of those prejudices that you do at the beginning. They wear out, and you see people are in the boat, the same boat as you are, as you go on. Anyway, I don't want to belabor the point. So we go down. How can that be understood? And can you understand it, basically? So then Ungan, okay, so now Tim says something to him and says, all over the body are hands and eyes. You know, so what does that mean? I mean, this is interesting. I mean, you can look at the diagram or the statue of Avalokiteshvara, and you know, you can restrict it to that and go, well, you know, yeah. Like with most archetypes or statues, I embody the attributes of what is out there to hear. All over the body are hands and eyes. What does that mean? No, I've got two. You know, I've got two. What does that mean? Is it all over the body here, this compassion here? Or does it mean all over the whole world, the true body of each one of us? Because our sense sphere reaches all over the world. You know, it was nice this week. We have our Rohatsu too, or December 8th, which commemorates the 7 days before the Buddha was enlightened. And on the 8th day, Venus, he sees Venus, and there's no separation there. We've been seeing Venus all week, you know, so every, you know, it doesn't matter, morning star, evening star, we see it wherever it comes up. And we, you know, we commemorate that realization of unity. But Venus is a long way from here. But whose sense sphere is it in? It's in everybody's. You know, we're seeing Ryan, Beetlejuice, you know, not the movie, and stars that are light years away. We can't say how far our sense sphere goes. And yet, you know, we say all over the body, not here. No, or all over the body. In that way, our hands and eyes. Now, that's kind of interesting, is that can you see compassion in your activities? Can you see compassion in difficulties where people are actually confronting one another, etc.? I mean, that's tricky. That's not easy at all. I mean, I know for myself, when I see something negative, is I learn vicariously. Ooh, I don't need to do that. You know, that doesn't look like it works. So you could say that's an act of compassion. But, you know, I'd rather say there is teaching everywhere in that respect. You can put the other labels on it, but there is teaching everywhere. You know, a lot of people say they restrict the Dharma to Dharma talks, which is sad, or Dharma occurring at certain places, rather than the teachings of light, sound, taste, touch, smell, thinking are appearing on a momentary basis. Not in a so-called successful way, but in a way that is. And then it's for us to shine the wisdom of that, the hands, onto each circumstance and see what works, and then to build what we feel is true to our own heart with the ingredients of our own life. And, you know, I mean, so these two are having fun, you know, and there's probably a bit of sibling rivalry going on here. So it goes, well, that's only 80% of it. Yeah, only 80%. I want to see his meter for doing that. You know, get one and, you know, just see, okay, you've got 90, you've got 92, 10. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it is interesting because there's probably a little bit more you can see here. And, you know, it's fair comment. It's fair comment, maybe. So, gives him another chance. Well, what do you think? Yours throughout the body, his hands and eyes. You know, and this is more an aspect of intimacy. You feel it. It's not just observational. You feel it. You feel that compassion in whatever way. And so then it's just then how do you act from that perspective? Now I think I've gone through the koan. And we've got people here and also on screen. So what I'm thinking now is to open it up for any questions or comments, and we'll take it from there.
You're welcome to use the raise hand function and unmute yourselves.
And if you don't, we'll turn it around so everybody can be seen from here too. So now's your chance. Hey, Jonan, carry on.
Hey, Tenzin.
Hey.
There were several things that you were talking about that kind of click with me, but I remember we had this guy at ZCLA, and maybe you knew him, but you weren't there when he lived there. His name was Hakwin. Mm-hmm. He was
Zenji.
Huh?
Zenji.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, we used to tease him.
Yeah,
but he would. He had that look, like after a session, he looked very beautiful, and I was always wondering, maybe, you know, Japanese might see, I don't want to be racist or anything, but might seem to be very kind of tense in a way or whatever. And then during Sesshin, it was like he opened up, you know, so his face was just open, and it was beautiful. You know, you could see that, yeah, he actually did Sesshin.
Yeah.
we actually said, you know, he left finally, and he was kind of, you know, he was the older son, and he was kind of sad to leave.
Yeah.
He had to go take care of his dad's temple. And I kind of got the feeling that he didn't really want to. But and then we were like, hey, you know, Hakuin, so, you know, we can come visit you sometime, right? He's like, no. It was funny. But
Bruce, yes. What's the point?
Oh, you know, just about that beautiful face, you know, that, yeah. You know, that opening up.
Yeah, yeah.
Face. And then I was looking at I'm sorry, I forgot your name. I could see his face, and there was something different. And then when you said, "Oh, we did Sesshin," I was like, "Oh yeah, right." You know, that the look. You know, it's kind of like this. It's like the blood gets up into the head instead of somewhere else. I don't know. You know. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's
not wisdom.
I also know I'm on camera.
So I have more, but you know, there must be a lot of people that got stuff to say. So,
okay, thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it. Sure. Brahma, you're up.
Hi. Could you say something about self-compassion, which is the one that I still struggle with?
Could I?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than compassion. I mean, love yourself, you know, because you know the world won't love you like you love yourself. Mm. If you do that, then you don't need anything from the outside. But it's also a practice, you know. That's where it's important to see who you are as a human being. And I don't mean describe yourself, you know, with your stories, but you can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, all of those things. And, you know, no matter what your difficulties are, is send yourself love. You know, meta meditation is really good for that, is practice it. It may be difficult for you at first to do that, but in time it'll sink in. And if you love the outside, start to love the inside like you do, you know, and it'll help in that way. But it's the core, you know, in part of it is I've got to love myself to love the world, because otherwise there's nothing to give out there if it isn't here.
Cool.
I mean, it sounds trite, but, you know, it's that practice, and it's open-ended in that respect. Hmm. And then, you know, today we also did a Jukai, and in that Jukai is it says, you know, do not be stingy, you know, in there, especially with the Dharma, the truth, and part of that is that, you know, you are the Dharma, you are the Buddha, you are the Sangha, and send value yourself in that way, and send yourself love in that respect. Hmm. You know, because otherwise, if you feel lacking here, that'll be transmitted to the world out there as well.
Yeah.
And love and compassion are really not two things as far as I'm concerned, you know. They're just, you know, they're just like put in slightly different ways.
Yeah. Respect. Thank you.
Thank you. Right, Ian, you're on.
Thank you, Roshi.
Thank you.
As I've been practicing in recent months, I've been reevaluating some relationships in my life and my family through the perspective of compassion, because there are people who I've sort of previously had determined that it was better for me just to not have any contact or just to cut them off. So how do you, in your life, have you experienced where people are taking advantage of your compassion?
And yeah, sure. And
how do you deal with something like that?
Yeah. I learn. You know, I mean, you know, I see how people act, and I see if it's benefiting them, and if it's not, and if it's mutual, etc. And I think I tend to veer on the side of giving, but at the same time is that I'm conscious where somebody is taking advantage of that, and I'll try and communicate that where I feel it's causing damage either with me or the people around me in that respect.
So it's evaluating the impact that you feel your compassion is actually having.
Yeah, and you know, it's not good for the other person either if they're taken all the time either, you know. But you know, that's a call. And who's to say? I mean, some will say, you know, give without any criteria whatsoever, just do that. That's also a practice for a period of time to see if that's true.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, we're dealing with people that especially could be damaging to you, is that you don't need to close the doors 100%. You can leave part of it open and wait for new information. They may change. They're not necessarily fixed, but always know how to put the boundaries up if you need to. You know, boundaries are fuzzy. They don't need to be solid all the time, you know, because it also takes energy to put up those boundaries. It's like with disliking or hating somebody, it takes a lot of energy. You don't need to do it until you need to put up those boundaries and it's necessary, you know. But also watch out for change, because they may start to see something in a different way, just in the same way you might as well.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Rishi.
Thank you. I know anyone in the room, because she's not on the screen. Yeah. Michelle.
I had to pre-check my question to see if it was silly. two things. I heard in a comment about compassion and self-compassion, which I thought was interesting, that I related and may be helpful, so I think I'll share, is just the driving here. Sometimes my compassion is action. It is not thinking nicely of myself, but it's the action of doing something good for myself, despite how I'm feeling. So that just really struck me when I heard that question. And then secondly, when you were reading about the 80% and the banter of that going back and forth, what's the 20%?
Throughout. So you feel it's the intimacy. It's not just observational. The connection is the feeling of it. Yeah. So, I mean, that might be there, but he's making sure that the other person sees it in that. Mm-hmm. In that respect. But again, you know, it's that you can't get a percentage, you know. No, but he's just a ballpark.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like the ripple effect. So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's don't you feel more after you say done session?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
So there's more that aspect too, and you see, I mean, you see all of the outpourings of affection that don't happen so much at the beginning, you know, because it's more like, oh, I've got to get through this before. Yeah. Thanks for that. Okay. And then now we have Deanne over here.
Hello, beloved Sangha. I think it's kind of a comment too, rather than a question, Roshi, but what helps me a lot sometimes is to remember that compassion is not doing for, although sometimes people do need something done for them, but it's feeling with them. And I think that's what people really respond to. That's what I really respond to. There may be, like the example that you gave of Mizumi handing the tissue. Yeah. There's nothing he can do about the actual circumstance.
Yeah.
But that person knowing that he's feeling with them just makes all the difference in the world. And that's really the most important thing we can do for one another.
Yeah.
And this practice makes that evident all the time. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. I like those because I don't have to respond.
I still are.
Here, there. Come on.
Hang on, man.
Good. So, Tim.
Unrelated to compassion. So normally session is time for like, you know, strenuous effort, right? For me.
Yeah, for sure.
And thinking about like these kind of like three, like the tripod of good practice, whatever, great doubt, determination, and faith.
Yeah.
For me, session normally is the time to bring up great doubt.
Yeah.
And this time I just didn't have it at all.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about, you know, kind of the other two. And yeah, what is that like to sit with great faith? Yeah. It's really fuzzy for me. What is that?
Chicken palate.
Yeah.
Just
no, but I mean, you know, doubt usually I really don't like that as a translation personally. For me, it's inquiry. You know, so it's more scientific on that level. It's not I doubt something, but if I do doubt it, I will inquire into it and see what is there. Faith is basically knowing that one way or another I can do it. You know, it's not faith in something else. It can be done, and I know my nature basically down there, even if it's not clear. And so it's like bringing that out, and then the inquiry raises it up more. You know, there's an analogy in Buddhism that's kind of like faith and doubt. It's like washing your hands. Can't do one without the other. So if you have faith and it's never put to the test, it never deepens. If you just have doubt, you don't have self-knowledge, it's always inquiry from the outside. Nothing is solid there. And then obviously determination is important, you know, because, you know, it's like, I think I'll just lay in bed this morning, you know. And for me, sometimes that great determination is just get my ass out of bed, you know, and then things unfold from that standpoint. We always put these things great in front of them, but great comes from small. You know, just the small thing, and then these things grow through practicing them over and over. You know, and no session or really for me, no meditation period is the same. You know, sometimes it's faith, sometimes it's doubt, sometimes it's, you know, hanging in there. depending. But the important thing is to be whatever your energy is at any given time and learn from it. You know, it's not that meditation should be something. You know, it's that we find out how meditation is. Now, if you don't have a goal in that respect, is then you can see directly what's in front of you because there's no place to go. That's the basis of Shikan. Koan is to actualize it, to make that true. You know, so that faith and doubt, they're applying all the time, you know. But in terms of practices, go to the doubt first. That way things will be clarified, or that inquiry. Don't just stay on the side of, yeah, well, this is fine. You know, if there's something that's niggling you, that's what you should look at. And that's not just koan, that's shikantaza too. The two are not separate in that respect. It's not about putting a veneer over things. Otherwise, you will end up with a seething mass underneath, which could come out at any time. So better to know it before it does that. Yeah. Mm. You got a job.
I
never end.
I'm curious about how to read the situation. Mm-hmm. You know what is the appropriate response. We were talking about a couple of days ago. You know, I have a adolescent child who's struggling.
Yeah.
And when you have compassion, you want to act from a place of compassion. There's an element of that that's forecasting, saying, I think in the future things could be this way.
Yeah.
So I will act in this way. I think you need more structure and stimulation, so we will sign you up or something. I think you need to be left alone. I think you need less structure. You have a theory, right?
Yeah.
And in dealing with another person, things get confused.
Yeah.
People are chaotic.
Yeah.
Teenagers are chaotic.
Yeah. You know that one.
So wonder if you had anything to share about how to hone your antenna toward.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you weren't accusing me of being an expert. You know, I'm finding out too, because I have a 16-year-old. You know, there is something in DNA too. I kind of look at him like he's a younger version of me. You know, I mean, that's a ballpark, but I always look at him afresh. You go, this looks like Nick. Well, how is he today? And so I find out how he is, and I try and do something along those lines. I'm cognizant of of some of the dangers of these days: drugs, you know, fast driving, fast women. You know.
These days,
and vice versa. but the thing is that I can't stop him from living, but I can teach him to do good choices. And I can put a certain amount of structure into that so that he can learn that structures for human beings are good. But I'm no expert in that way, you know. And if I do make an executive decision there, I've got to live with it. And so does he, you know. And hopefully I can learn from it too. Because I don't want him to be something. I want to be for him to be himself and be able to make those decisions for himself and be able to, you know, to see a situation and enter into it, you know, not in a black and white way, but to see shades and be able to make decisions for himself. So in other words, I haven't told you anything, but my process is still going on in that way too. And I'm sure that there's parents here that have been successful and falling flat on their faces in this process. I'm getting nods from around me, so yeah, I feel, yeah.
Yeah, there are so many careers that are based on compassion. I think of the grocery clerk,
yeah,
or the teacher. And we don't have a language to celebrate that.
No.
I'm standing in line with the grocery and I'm just enjoying the hell out of it. And yet, I'm limited in what I can do because it's not part of our culture. What next can I do to celebrate them?
Yeah, treat them well.
Yeah.
Appreciate them. Yeah. Yeah, I would. I mean, that's part of it. It's just, you know, everybody has their own place in this world. It's important to value that. Because they're like me. Everyone's like, oh, I see it that way. They're like me in that respect. So my grandfather, my Irish grandfather, would say to me, be kind to people on the way up because you might meet them on the way down.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Yeah. And even if you don't go up and down, it's worthwhile too.
I don't know if this is a question or a comment, but I noticed at the beginning that you made a kind of a false antonym out of the Theravadin's practice, metta from the outside in, Zen from the inside out. I just wanted to say that was definitely not my experience.
Who's mine? That's my experience.
But it's like if you're saying a mantra, it's, well, the mantras are to keep in concentration, but at first, if you're saying a mantra to yourself and you don't have anything to connect that with inside, then there is no metta. It's only the moment where you can feel it, or mudita, you know, sympathetic joy, or any of the brahmaviharas. You can't, if you don't have it in there, then the words mean nothing. This is the moment when it arises from within. That's meaningful. I
didn't get
any
of this. Okay, well, that's your opinion. It's not mine. So, you know, it's just a difference in opinion.
in that way.
Yeah. Could well be. Yeah. All right.
Could I say something to David's comment?
Yeah.
Not in our culture. What's in your culture? You know, it's just black. There's no barrier there.
Well, it's in my culture. I just don't hear it celebrated enough.
Yeah, celebrated.
Thank you. I'll do my best.
Yeah.
To continue.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yep.
I had an example of that when I was in Target before I came back up here to select brooms to bring up to the center. A very mundane thing, right?
Yeah.
And I was getting frustrated because there were no brooms available, and they were the wrong type, and there was nobody in the store to know. And so I found myself getting frustrated, and I thought, no, just keep looking around. And suddenly this woman came down the aisle. And her name was Belinda. Mm-hmm. And it was really important I knew her name. I asked her name. And we talked about brooms. We talked about the supply chain problems right now. She told me she was going to the back because she was certain there were some brooms in inventory. She came out with all these brooms. She said, are these the right kind? Is this enough? The ones that you just threw down on the floor because they're not the right amount. I mean, I didn't do it in an angry way. But just laid them down. She said, I will put those back. And then we just kind of, we chatted a little bit about what it meant right now to try to find what we needed, to try to help someone else. And she was like a bodhisattva in the Target broom aisle. She really was. She gave off that energy, and she was doing it out of love. You could tell. And she even said, you know, some of the newer people need a lot of guidance, and they might not have been directing you correctly because they need more help. So she was even extending compassion to the new people that had been brought on board because they can't find any employees and they don't get any training. Yeah, so I just, I saw this big picture in Target. I said to her, who is your manager? I would like to tell them how wonderful you've been. And she's, no. yes. So she said, oh, that would be lovely. And then she went off. And so I sought out somebody to find out who her manager was. And he said, thank you. I'm going to do a shout out announcement now over the intercom. So it was almost like this little mini celebration in Target. Listen up, everyone. Belinda made a customer very happy. And it's just like, and it was such a perfect thing coming back up here after that experience. So I think there are moments like that, David, that we have available to us all the time.
More of that.
That we just, you know, but at first my inclination was frustration. People aren't doing what they should do. I mean, I do a lot of that kind of thing until I notice myself. So, yeah, that was just a joyful experience. Good. So.
Okay. Okay, so you guys online, come on, join in. Hey, Liam. Yeah.
You're muted, Liam.
You're muted.
Yeah. There you go. Sorry.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, good. I can hear you.
It's been a while. I was away for 2 weeks. Forgot about the muting business or the unmuting. I like what you said about, you know, love and compassion being the same thing. And like in our culture, or the culture I was brought up with, you know, it's the basis of Christianity. Now, the practice of it is a bit wayward, to say the least, you know, but it's still the basis of it, still right at the core. And what I could really see with the similarity between Buddhism and Christianity is actually that.
Yeah.
Compassion is at the core of the Buddhist way, and love is at the core of the Christian way. So they're both the same. They're both exactly the same at the core. But developing, it's where the practice comes in is the development of, like, you know, we've heard it said, the well of compassion. You know, the well of compassion is within. And it's the development of that. So, you know, after a week, like what you've had, is it a week you've been practicing? Is that session?
Yeah.
Like a whole week of just practice. And I mean, that's developing the well of that compassion, isn't it? It's, is that true?
Maybe it's the bucket.
No. The well is in there. Come on.
You need a bucket.
Okay, right. Yeah. So, without, I suppose, okay, without the bucket, fair enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's good to laugh.
Yeah, it is. It is. But it is interesting. You know, I remember when I was studying with Maizumi Roshi, one of the reasons they didn't use love much in, at least in from his standpoint of Japanese Buddhism, it was mixed too much with romantic love.
Mm.
So they use compassion. It's not that the feeling changes in any way. It's that, you know, you train with people over a period of time, you love them. You know, they're like family in that way.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, and those teachings, you know, Christianity, the basis of Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, you know, the Quran and et cetera, they all have those elements of human bonding, because the alternative is not that great. You know, quite often in Zen, we don't emphasize the moral aspects of the precepts, for instance. But those are the things that bond us, you know, knowing that somebody's not going to kill me, I'm more likely to be friendly with them. You know, same if they're not going to steal my stuff or lie to me, is that then that I'm more likely to be bonded with those people. If as a society we buy into those things, no matter what religion we are, then we have connections there from our own activities and commitments. You know, those are amazing things that bond us across religions and you know, nations even, when we actually get on board together in along those lines.
You know? And they're all pointing out that it's within. You know, it is our nature.
Yeah, yeah.
Not something that we have to, you know, kind of believe in or. You know, okay, yeah. Have faith is different, you know, but to have faith that is actually within is a very important part of all religions.
Yeah. And in many ways, you know, it's easier to love someone than hate them. It's a lot harder to hate somebody. For me, anyway, it is. And then to have to hold on to that over a period of time.
And it's much more fun as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, yeah. Liam. Thank you. Lovely hearing from you. Oh, and congratulations. I hear the Irish rugby team beat the All Blacks.
Oh, yeah. I was stuck to the ceiling yesterday. It was ecstatic because they are so good. And for us to beat them was like, well, we must be brilliant.
This is a good example. We bond over delusion.
It's only a game. It's only a game.
Yeah.
It was great. It was
great. It's a religion, I understand. All right. Well, I think my ability to talk is being severely threatened at this point. So... you know, thank you all for your practice, and thank you for all of your work you do in your spheres to help the people. Let's have a good, well, for us interim now. So thank you all.